I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shocked the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Howard and forward, Jack Price in goal!
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. We are recording this on the evening of April 10th, 2018, right after the New York Red Bulls crashing out of CONCACAF Champions League, and not that any of us were able to watch it that much, but Toronto FC advancing, slaying the giant that is Club America, such that we have a Chivas de Guadalajara and Toronto FC CCL final. But first, my co-host, Rabbi Mark Goodman, you have had one heck of a day, and you want to talk about it.
A little bit. I mean, I'm just going to skip around the uninteresting parts, which is like, I coached my kids U8 soccer practice today, which went really well, and my daughter helped coach, and she ate a bunch of chocolate cupcakes. And then I came home, and I was all excited to watch CCL, and I'll get to that in a second, and then my daughter apparently ate too many of the chocolate cupcakes, because she barfed all over her comforter this evening, and Daddy got to do the fun part of cleaning up barf. But that's not what I'm going to talk about right now. What I really want to talk about is the thing that really ruined my night, other than the barf, which is Go 90. Oh my God, Matthew!
Yes.
This is ridiculous, and yes. I'm sure... When Matt came over tonight, and he was like, he had the game on, he was all excited to watch the rest of the second game of the night. He came over at halftime. So he watched the West of Red Bulls, and I was, Toronto and...
I watched the first 83 minutes of Red Bulls.
And I was done. And I was absolutely done, because there's that little window that kept popping up on both broadcasts that was, pardon us, we're experiencing a temporary delay. And it's like, at some point the question becomes, is this really a temporary delay? Because I've been watching the temporary delay screen more than I've been watching actual people kick a soccer ball. And it was super frustrating. How did CONCACAF, and I think I know the answer to this, by the way, how did CONCACAF decide we're going to pick an over-the-internet streaming service that nobody on the planet has ever heard of and only runs, like, third- and fourth-tier infomercial slash reality TV quality stuff slash garbage? How did they pick this craptastic organization to stream live games that are going out to, like, literally 20 different countries in the CONCACAF region? My quick assumption is it involves large manila envelopes full of cash.
Yep.
And or, you know, sketchy banks in Antilles and Barbados and Bermuda and so on. And possibly, on top of that, some malfeasance with either SUM or MLS. Now, I gave MLS a little ribbing on this on Twitter tonight, and three people jumped on me immediately. Andrew Wiebe, Rob Usery, and Jonathan Tenenwald, all soccer writers extraordinaire, who said, oh,
all three must follows on Twitter, by the way.
Yeah, whether you, although, you know, and Rob doesn't listen to this podcast, but if he does, he should hear that he is relatively insufferable with his fanboying about Atlanta United. He is, but he knows that, and I think you can respect that. But anyways, long story short, and then we'll get off the banter part. Go 90 was trash, and it's totally unacceptable for CONCACAF to have gone in on this with them. It's somewhat unacceptable for MLS to let CONCACAF do this, because the alternatives were, you know, someone said, oh, can't you just get on Univision Deportes? I don't have Univision Deportes. Someone else said, why don't you flip over to Univision Deportes Radio? And I was like, great, I did that. And I was like, oh, right, I haven't taken Spanish in 12 years. I'm not good at it. And all I remember is basically, like, name of Toronto person and, you know, La Pelota and Cabezazo and a few other random words. And after like 5 minutes, I was like, I don't know what's going on. This is over. So Go 90, you are trash. You partially ruined my night. The only thing that made my night worse was getting barfed on by a 5-year-old. So thank you, CONCACAF, for being a chocolate cupcake barf-tastic, like, evening surprise.
Okay, then.
Rant over.
Okay, Rabbi, I'm having a great week. Without going into too much detail about, like, the work situation, I had a lot more flexibility in my schedule this week.
So Matt's a gymnast in his free time.
I'm not a gymnast in my free time. I wish I could say that I had the abs for that. But in any case, Mark, basically, I had some free time during the middle of the day. The Rapids were off from training yesterday, so of course I was at training today. Spoke with Anthony Hudson, a few other people. Had a great another interview that I'm going to tease at the end that will not be a part of this episode, but will be a part sometime in the not-so-distant future.
Mm.
And basically, I was traveling all last week, Mark. And then, so I got back. Saturday was basically chore day leading up to the Rapids game. And then Saturday was a little bit more chore. So I'd done all of my adulting over the weekend. I find out Monday morning, I suddenly have a whole bunch of free time. I decide I'm going to Rapids training the next day, Tuesday, today that we're recording.
Always a good choice.
Always a good choice. So Monday, I have a whole bunch of free time, and I'm an engineer. I'm a former graduate student who's used to absorbing large blocks of information quickly.
So you designed a suspension bridge on your free time.
I did not design a suspension bridge on my free time. Mark Goodman, I went down the soccer internet Wikipedia rabbit hole to end all soccer internet rabbit holes. I watched a whole bunch of videos from Copa 90. I found a random book off of that from a Leeds United supporter talking about fan violence in the 1970s that led to Leeds United supporters and Millwall FC supporters getting their really, really bad reputation that they carry on today. Downloaded her book, like, getting Kindle on my phone on the Amazon app has been an absolute miracle for me traveling and reading books and stuff. Plowed through all of that. Watched a Zlatan documentary, watched a couple of other documentaries that I found on it. 6 hours later, Mark Goodman, it is 1:30 in the morning, Tuesday morning, and I, in 21 minutes, read the entire Wikipedia page about Grimsby Town FC, a League Two team in England. And then I read up about how they had an FA Cup run in the 1970s that involved several massive victories at home in the frigid North Midlands of England against Manchester United, I believe Nottingham Forest, who had just defeated Bayern Munich in the the equivalent of Champions League now is the Europa Cup at the time final. And a whole bunch of other teams. Mark, I'm totally ready for us to start, like, a BBC World Podcast, like, stories in the spirit of Radio Labs with the meticulous details of The Ball Is Round about the most obscure lower division soccer stories nobody's ever heard of, but everybody needs to hear.
I would love that. I've covered lower division here in Colorado, and it's been a blast, so kudos to you. If you wanted to do a real project that would serve all Rapids fans for the rest of history. Most of you probably know this, fans, and if any of you are super bored and you want to do this on your free time, Wikipedia's individual seasons on the Colorado Rapids, like, don't go beyond, I think, 2009 or something like that. Anything before 2009, there's just nothing. So, and unfortunately, the Rapids website doesn't have great history either. You guys probably remember at the beginning of this podcast we did Today in Rapids
This
Week in Rapids History. And they were hard to do. It was really hard to find stuff. You had to go and go and go because it's not easy to find. But anyhow, all right, on to the soccer ring.
On to the soccer ring. Mark Goodman, the Rapids had a result this past Saturday. They got a 1-1 draw against FC Dallas on the road in Frisco, Texas. Relatively defensive game for the Rapids in terms of not a lot of possession, but I thought they did a very good job of preventing Dallas from having possession with a purpose. 62nd minute, Joe Mason gets a goal off of a turnover that Dominic Baggi creates. They have a quick little 1-2 together, something that Joe Mason said after the game that they had been practicing. So major kudos to that. Joe Mason finishes on that. Dominic Baggi continues to be hot. Joe Mason gets his second goal with the Rapids. The Rapids then proceed to, I wouldn't say park the bus, but gradually move the bus into park.
No, that was parking. That
okay.
Was 80-20 possession over the last 15 minutes.
Okay.
That's, That's as much parking the bus as it gets, I think.
Okay, parking the bus, lots of really, really good defense, but then for the third, or excuse me, for the third game in four, in league play, Christian Coleman with a fabulous header over the top on a ball from Mario Diaz that completely goes over the line. Coleman on side, heads the ball into the far corner, and the Rapids get out with a 1-1 draw. They have now just have one win in this game, and this is now three games that they have not won in league play, all of which involved a goal being conceded in the 89th minute or afterwards, for all intents and purposes, stoppage time. Mark Goodman, let's start on the positive here. What was your good thing from the draw against Dallas?
Because of the possession time, my sense of things was that the Rapids more or less went toe-to-toe for the first, like, 70 minutes. And I like it when they go toe-to-toe and play teams straight up. You know, they used to bunker on the road. In this game, they didn't really bunker on the road. They played straight-up soccer for a while. They looked pretty... It was a kind of a droll game. There wasn't a ton of chances for either team early on, really for the first 60 minutes. But the Rapids are the better of the chances, and they looked... pretty challenging. You brought up that point of how the goal got scored, which was that nice little deep ball into Dom Badji, and then he flips it to Joe Mason after winning it over Matt Hedges. That was another long bomb from Tommy Smith, and that's the second time that Tommy Smith has been involved in a very, very deep pass that ends up as a goal. So really remarkable, and I was also looking up his passing stats on AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com, an excellent website you should all read. They're doing a lot more articles now, and they added a whole new metric at the end of last year and this year called expected passing, which is a really interesting new metric that I'm going to be nerding out on a lot. It's fairly complicated. It basically does what expected goals does for passing, which is, you know, rate a person on their passing by thirds. It shows that a number of players, Jack Price and Tommy Smith in specific, are really good above average passers in Major League Soccer. And Tommy Smith has been deadly accurate. So we're starting to see some of the reasons why Porik Smith thought these guys were good acquisitions, that they are defensive players who add something to the offense. So that's the good stuff. I was really pleased with how the offense worked for 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, what do you think?
I'm going to echo your point on the offensive side. You compare this to some of the other, you know, drudging 1-1 draws the Rapids have had at Dallas in recent years, and this isn't like... They were outshot 17-9, but shots on target were 5-4. So the same good defense overall in terms of limiting chance creation, you know, not allowing, letting Dallas have the ball, but dictating what they do with the ball. And it's okay, you're going to get to the final third, but then you're going to run into a roadblock and you're not going to create much of anything. Whereas we might not have the ball for as much or as long or as many opportunities, but the chances that are going to be created are going to be higher quality. We've talked offhand a number of times about X goals. You know, okay, Mark, what would you rather have? Would you rather have 100 opportunities in a soccer game that are 1% chance of going in, or would you rather have 10 opportunities that had a 10% chance of going in? Technically, those both come out to one X goal, but in that sense, the Rapids had, you know, three or four really good opportunities, all of which could have easily been goals. Dominic Badji with that shot that the goalkeeper just barely stopped, and then I think a defender had to clear off the line in the first half, was an excellent opportunity. The Joe Mason chance was a good chance. I want to say Johan Blomberg had a chance in the final 20 minutes as well. The Rapids, I think, are a better version of themselves than last year in comparison to how they've played at Dallas, in that same roughly possession and passing stats, same zonal time possessing stance, same number of chances. Rapids chances, really high quality. Dallas chances, really low quality. Just kind of unfortunate with the Christian Coleman opportunity that it ended up being a draw on this one. On that note, Mark, in the spirit of late goals and things not going so well, what was your bad takeaway from this match?
There are a lot of ways of slicing what's going on late with the Rapids dropping three of four late. They haven't dropped three games. They've been dropping points in three of four games. You know, they lost outright to New England on a very late goal. They lost outright to...
Or they drew to Sporting, so right. Effectively dropping 2 points.
Right. They drew to Sporting, and they drew to Dallas. So that's 5 points that they've let go. But there are a lot of ways to slice it. I think that the simplest one that I think is worth talking about, because the rest of it's going to go into my Backpass article on AroundMLS.com this week, so you should read that. But I'll tease the first part of it, which is basically that the tactic of bunkering is pretty questionable. It's very... The problem was that the Rapids, for the last 20 minutes of the game, gave Dallas the ball. Absolutely gave them the ball. They had 21 clearances in the last 20 minutes, as compared with 22 clearances in the first 70 minutes. I mean, that is just... You know, that is panic, right? We're not going to try and settle the ball and look for a pass. We're just going to kick it out, right? We're not even going to think about it. Everything was kicked out. Even the balls that shouldn't, that really were, there was no other Dallas player around. He could have settled it. He could have brought it down. He could have played it back.
If this was hockey, they've been icing it for 5 minutes.
It was absolutely dumping the puck. That's half of it. The other half of it is, besides clearances, you've got terrible passes. You know, Tim Howard would have the ball after an errant Dallas shot, and he would just launch it long. They did not play out of the back once. If they had the ball deep on a turnover, they kicked a long pass, and they basically posted Dom Badji up top by himself and said, Dom, if you get it, great. There's going to be no wing support, though. Nicky Jackson will be running around harassing people. He's not going to be an offensive weapon. It was really frustrating, and like I said, the possession was out there. You are giving Dallas extra chances. You know, it goes back to your point a little bit of, do you want to give a team, you know, 101%, you know, chance shots? Well, if you give teams extra opportunities to shoot the ball, you are creating more of a higher percentage chance that they're eventually going to score on one of those chances. Right? That's what the bad passes did. That's what the clearances did. They gave Dallas the ball almost completely for 15 minutes. And I'm not saying like some of those passes, like clearing it isn't a good idea sometimes, or playing the hopeless long pass. But if you're not even threatening on offense, then Dallas doesn't have to keep you honest with defenders, right? And they know that. They can put 11 guys up in attack.
Then the center backs are basically...
While you're putting 11 back in defense. And so it was this all-or-nothing tactic that was a throwback to Pablo Ball. You know, it was the Mastronaccio, as people talk about it, that Pablo liked to bunker the hell out of the game for sometimes 90 minutes, and it was super frustrating. We're bunkering at the end, and it's... frustrating, and there are other problems that I'll talk about in writing, but I'll turn it over to you for the bad thing. What are the other bad things, or what is one other bad thing besides the defensive lapses at the end?
Collective defensive breakdowns, Mark. We exchanged a couple tweets in the aftermath of full time on Saturday, and then I proceeded to, with all that free time I have, I'm going to show you my notebook here, and I might tweet this out to the listeners.
My goodness.
My blame pie of analyzing every single goal the Rapids have given up this season
from
the run of play. So excluding the free kick opportunity that was scored by Chris Tierney in the season opener.
Which I agree with you is probably unavoidable. I mean, when you strike some magic, you strike some magic.
Yes.
And also as a deflection.
Yes. So in every single one of those, I went through some of the blame pie, and I don't want to bag on him, but okay, Mark, guess what player has been involved in every single goal the Rapids have given up from the run of play from a blame pie standpoint?
Is it Declan Wynn?
It is Declan Wynn. Okay, so here's the thing here.
Ding,
so,
ding, 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 ding! So you win a pass blue ribbon!
So the Toronto... So I did this in terms of ranking each goal, when it was scored, the back three that were played, and then which side of the field the goal came from.
Yeah.
For the most part, how the chance was ultimately created, how that play was developed, has not come down the middle against the Rapids. They're not going through Jack Price. They're not going through Nana Boateng. They sure as heck haven't been going through Tommy Smith. The two goals they gave up against Toronto and CCL both started from the Rapids' left side of the field. Who was the left center back in the first leg against Toronto?
Declan Wynn.
Okay. Goal given up against New England from the run of play was scored on the right. Guess who the right center back was?
Declan Wynn.
Two goals scored against Sporting Kansas City, both from the right. Declan Wynn. The goal, you know, albeit a long ball, ultimately the chance, the point where the shot was taken in terms of head of Christian Coleman hitting was on the right side of the ball. Now, I went through in all this analysis. I'm not sure if I'm going to write this out or tweet this out this week, folks, but essentially, Declan Wynn, for the most part, isn't entirely to blame on any of these goals. There are, you know, for the blame pie, there are four or five slices in some cases that we're handing out, especially when you look at, say, the second goal against SKC that we handed out. But pretty much, in terms of castigating blame on the goal against Dallas, Dominic Baggi could have closed down Mauro Diaz on the 40-yard ball, but at the same time, like, the ball's at midfield, you're going to want to maintain your shape, not create an opening for him to do something that then opens you up three or four passes down the way. You could blame Tim Howard for not coming out, but that ball by Diaz, this is maybe the one goal from the run of play that you have to say touche to the opponent, because the ball's placed so perfectly that Tim Howard's in no man's land. If he comes out for it, he's probably doomed. If he stays in his net, he's probably not going to save it. So I think Howard maybe could have made a better attempt on that one. Yeah. But realistically, I don't think, you know, unless he immediately saw it, that was a low percentage play on either end of it. But what does Declan Wynn do on that one? He doesn't track the runner. He lets him get behind, and he essentially has a free header, at least try and challenge him on that one. So that's a concern for me. I don't, whether it's real or not, and we can break down how and why and try and get into the psychology of these players in terms of what's going on late in game, it doesn't really matter if there's something systematic here, Mark. This is something that has now happened in three games in the last four, and now whether it's real or not, whether it's something manufactured or not, or systematically they're doing wrong, now it's in their heads.
There's, I mean, the interesting thing about the Declan Wynn thing in this game was that if you go back to the 82nd minute, there's an almost identical play. Mauro Diaz chips a ball over the top. Coleman's running onto it. Wynn sees it the whole way and clears it out with his head, and it's a no big deal. It's just very weird that in the 89th minute, he's just got a full-blown brain fart, and he just kind of hesitates for just too long and doesn't get to that ball. Kip Colby is out there too, and he's beat like from minute one also. It's that goal was 100% on 100%, 90% on Wynn, but Colby didn't cover himself in glory, and all these guys are still Colby's trying to establish whether he's a legit first tier MLS player this year, and you know, he had the lowest passing percentage of the game. He also had, the fewest or, like, the second fewest defensive actions for a defensive player. So, like, there are a number of players on the Rapids who weren't covering themselves in glory. Wins at the top of that list, though, with a bullet.
Absolutely. So that's a concern, especially as you saw how Sporting started to attack that side and how that sort of became a priority for Dallas. Is this something that when Toronto FC maybe tomorrow or so, or teams in the coming down the schedule, when they get to the week that they're playing the Rapids, is this something the coaching staff is keying on? You know, is this a week, you know, what's the... the team is only, the chain is only strong as its weakest link. Are they going to be going after that, so to speak? So that's a concern for me.
I mean, the interesting thing is that Tommy Smith's a big guy. Axel Schellberg's a really big guy. So you might think going over the top is a bad idea, but, Declan Wynn's not that tall. And so going at him with high balls is something that teams can now do. You can go at Axel Schellberg with speed, because he's not the paciest guy there. I think you're right. I think that Toronto can look at, the coaching staff can look at this back five, and also the way Jack Price sets up to kind of kill and destroy, and can pull things apart and create problems. I think there are some real ways of attacking the Rapids. There's one other, which was, and this is really about Miguel Barrios being, if you're a fantasy MLS player, Miguel Barrios is a pickup. He was a terror a lot of this game, and he pulled a lot of guys out to his side, and he created a lot of chances. Edgar Castillo was really good for much of the night, but he got pulled apart on at least two or three plays where he was buck naked and praying to God that that ball just didn't wind up in the wrong spot. But, you know, if you want to buy low on a really good player, Miguel Barrios is a good way to go. Somebody on Dallas got to finish some of those chances he puts in, though.
Just one quick fact check before we move on. Tommy Smith listed as 6'2". Axel Højbjerg listed as 6'7". You want to guess how tall Declan Wynn is, Mark?
I think he's 5'10"? 5'11"?
5'10".
Yeah.
Okay.
Which means he's really 5'9", and we all know that.
Okay, moving on. The big thing for me, Mark, yellow cards. There were 5-6 yellow cards handed out on this one, and only one was to a Dallas player. And a particular concern for me, you know, take away the PK chance that he had against New England, I think on paper and by the eye test, he's been really good. But Jack Price now has 3 yellow cards in 4 league games, and yellow cards is an absolute war of attrition that will bite you. Just ask anybody who's had a really, you know, ask any nation that has had a really physical, say, quarterfinal in the World Cup, and then they're missing a bunch of players for the semis. So that's a concern for me. I don't necessarily mind some of the yellow cards if it's like a tactical foul where it's I'm going to prevent a really good opportunity, but you had, you know, the Dominic Baggi yellow card in the 54th minute that I thought was really, really unnecessary. So, you know, maybe some senseless yellow cards, maybe some good yellow cards, but the Rapids are getting a lot of them. They're not drawing a whole lot, and now, you know, possibly they're by money investment with the transfer fee, the TAMUs, and a salary. We're going to have a big budget, you know, salary cap episode coming up in the next couple of weeks when that's released probably by the league. But Jack Price is starting to get into yellow card trouble, and I'm a little concerned about where that's going in the context of a 34-game season, Mark.
Yeah, my big thing is Joe Mason, I guess, which was, you know, I did not have put a lot of stock in Joe Mason when Colorado acquired him. I just think, you know, another cast off from Wolverhampton who didn't have a lot of goals. He reminded me way too much of Kevin Doyle. And his mobility is very good, and he has finished. I mean, he has 2 goals in MLS to start the year, and that's super impressive. It's kind of a weird position to be in as a Rapids fan to look at Dominic Baggi with 4 goals, Joe Mason with 2, Nicky Jackson with 1, playing very well. I mean, he came on and harassed and ran his butt off during this game. And then we're adding Yannick Bolli to the list. I mean, it's feast and famine. I mean, you know, maybe Colorado needs to break out the 4-2-4 and just put 4 strikers up top and just get crazy.
You're going to play with 3 number 9s and Joe Mason underneath?
Sure, why not, man? You just got to... Yeah, we never went out and got a 10, so we just got 4 9s instead. It's like, you know, we're working for a full house here, I guess. I don't know. Anyhow, it's pretty crazy. But I wouldn't say I'm on the Joe Mason hype train, but I'm definitely...
Are you buying his stock?
I think I can honestly say, and something that my wife tells me repeatedly all the time, is like, I was probably wrong, you know, like, I think if I wasn't wrong, I was definitely really low on Joe Mason, and now I think he's a serviceable, quality striker that could do some real damage. It could drop in and kind of be a false 9, kind of possible 10-type player for the Rapids, too, if we need him to be.
Okay, Mark, this Saturday, April 14th, the Colorado Rapids have a game. It is a 1 p.m. Mountain Time kickoff, folks. Don't show up at 4 o'clock and expect the C38 tailgate to still be there. And they are taking on the aforementioned Toronto FC. This will now be the 3rd time they've seen them, folks. Their roster hasn't changed much since we previewed them for CCL, so I won't bore you with all of those details. But, Mark, Toronto FC had an absolutely mentally and physically exhausting game against Club America. They were outpossessed, even though they had the aggregate lead, they were outshot 29-8, and Greg Vanney started virtually a first-choice starting 11, and then made all 3 of his substitutions. And you're talking about a Toronto FC team that went from Toronto last week to playing in Mexico City at altitude and now has to come to Denver. I'm presuming that they're not traveling back to Colorado, and based on my understanding of the CBA rules, since they are coming from a CCL game, they could legally charter a flight from from Mexico City to DIA without using one of their 4 charter flights for the season. So presumably they'll be staying at altitude, but this team is exhausted. This team is really, really happy. And as we've seen from them in league play, Mark, they are not caring about league whatsoever. They are all in on the Champions League hype train.
Yeah. You know, Josie Altidore probably, he got hurt and went out in the 7th minute. It looked like another hamstring, but I am doing an irresponsible journalist thing and and prognosticating about injuries with absolutely no basis on it, but that's just what I would bet. So you won't see him. If I were Greg Vanney, I would rest a lot of these guys. Giovinco did not take off any of the games when he went midweek CCL, weekend MLS. He's played, I think, every single game. I don't think he's had a day off. You can check that on me. Drew Moore is probably going to sit out. Michael Bradley's a maybe. You've got Marky Delgado and Jonathan Osorio, who played in this game, so they could both be potentially subbed out. So we're looking at a very interesting possible...
You could be looking at a Toronto A-minus B-plus lineup.
Which is still a pretty good lineup. You've got Jordan Hamilton and Toussaint Ricketts. You've got... I'm going to try and pronounce this, and then you can mock me later. Iger Akeche, who came from Spain this year, and he's been getting some limited use. After that, I think it's a thin bench for Toronto. So you could really see a Toronto B team this week in Commerce City.
I think this is a team that can absolutely be had in this one, Mark. And not only are you dealing with the Jozy Altidore injury, but, you know, maybe you rest Giovinco on this one or have him on the bench just in case, so to speak. They're pretty deep at center back, so I don't think we'll see Drew Moore, but we'll still see a really, really good defense. I think there's a very real possibility, given how Greg Vanney's handled the league game on the weekend, CCL game midweek, that we'll be seeing an old friend, Clint Irwin, possibly in goal as well. But the other thing to look at, Jozy Altidore's hurt, so there's no way they're going to risk him in a non-conference game at altitude with a whole bunch of travel. But then his primary backup, who came in for him, Toussaint Ricketts, ended up playing 73 minutes. So it's not like the bench guy is going to be super fresh and totally ready to get into a game for the first time either. So
their lineup, their ability to win this weekend is mostly on their training staff. They were missing four players, one who won't be back, Nick Haglund, and then three players who were kind of surprises and they had minor knocks, Justin Morrow, Chris Mavinga, and Victor Vasquez. If they can get Chris Mavinga and Victor Vasquez healthy and here to Colorado, they're a very strong lineup. If they can't, they've got problems because they're starting to get... They had to play both of their first-choice right-backs, Alro and Vanderweel, tonight, because they just didn't have another center back to pick. If they don't get any of those guys back, it's going to be a slight issue. They're going to start getting into the standard wear and tear of being the kind of team that's trying to get, in their case, you know, three trophies again, or four potentially this year. So you got to be like Chelsea. You got to have 50 players spread all throughout Europe, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Mark, thought experiment here with me. So in the context of the MLS season, Toronto FC is going to play every Western Conference team once. Half of those are going to be at home. Half of those are going to be away. Toronto's really, really good at home. We saw them destroy RSL a couple of Fridays ago. Away games are going to be a little bit tougher, pending... you know, obviously no World Cup, so that's not affecting the American players, but pending a bunch of injuries, random midweek game that they have to play, and a team-wide case of the runs. This is probably the weakest Toronto FC team that you could possibly see for an MLS game.
Yeah.
On the road, albeit their condition and altitude, but still having to play at altitude to a team. We'll get to this in our next segment, talking about From Field 20, who's getting healthy. You know, if the Rapids are able to get 3 points on Saturday, that's 3 points that almost none of half the Western Conference that has to play at BMO Field this season is going to get, and the vast majority of the teams playing at home are not going to get. So if you get a point from this, that's a point that a lot of other teams that you're competing with for a playoff spot aren't going to get. If you get 3 points, there's probably only one or two other teams who are going to be on par with you. This is a massive opportunity for the Rapids on the field in the context of the Western Conference playoff race and to make a major statement about what Anthony Hudson is everything that the team is doing with hashtag trust the process. The other thing that I think is kind of interesting from this standpoint, they're not so much of a bogey team where maybe they haven't fully seen, you know, when they saw Sporting Kansas City and all the changes that they've made, going into this season, you didn't necessarily know going into the game all the clubs that Peter Vermes had in the bag, so to speak. You've played Toronto FC for 180 minutes. Because of all the CCL games that they've had to play, you have more game film on them than you probably would normally on a team in the regular season. There should be no surprises other than maybe a couple of lineup changes into what they're going to see on Saturday. The Rapids should be extremely prepared from a book-smart preparation footnote standpoint in terms of being ready for what Toronto is going to throw at them. I think this, I'm not going to label this a must-win, Mark, but this is a team that you're not going to have the deck stacked for you against a team that has, you know, a $14 million salary like this one. This is the game the Rapids should win for me on Saturday.
This is their best chance to beat Toronto over the last couple years. It's been years since I saw them go to Toronto or play Toronto at home and look like they had a fighting chance. So I'll agree with you on that note. I will say that beating Western Conference opponents, especially middle and end of the year when you know whereabouts those Western Conference teams are in the standings, those are real six-point swingers. You know, that's when you are looking, you know, potentially at the sixth, seventh, eighth spots in the Western Conference, and you can knock off, you can beat, if you're the six, you can knock off the eight. Those are big, those are bigger games, I think.
You can knock off the eight and probably jump to five.
That said, the one thing I'll say about this game is it's a really good opportunity to take points. You know, a tie is okay here. A win is very good. A loss is really unacceptable, I would say. Mm-hmm. Not only because it's home, but also because Toronto's weak right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mark, so this match is at 1 p.m. The C38 tailgate, even though it is a afternoon start, will be the usual 3 hours before kickoff, so at 10 a.m. proper. So I'd say certainly eat a big breakfast. And, Mark, where are you and I going to be at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday?
11:30, we're going to be somewhere in the tailgate area. There's some tables set up, some metal tables around kind of like the kind of snack bar-y area. I think we might try and stake out one of those. If not, I've got my folding chairs, and we'll set up our folding chairs and hang out. I'll probably bring a leftover bottle of wine from Passover, so we can do like an informal wine and cheese if anybody would like. I'll bring some craft singles or something like that. So yeah, come and hang out with us. And Matt wants it to be, you know, like a Matt definitely has an idea about, like, you know, letting us be the gurus at the top of the mountain and, you know, us bringing enlightenment to the people. I just want to kick back and have a beverage with people. I'll be coming off of coaching a youth soccer game that morning. And I kid you not, guys, I am 0-18 with this team.
How has the board not fired you yet, Mark? Like, you guys have to be in the relegation zone.
That would that it was that way. No, literally, I have sent emails to the head of my local soccer club saying, can you please send me some kids who are not at the tail end of the birth year? Because the way you probably folks out there know that U.S. soccer has now organized all the things by, I don't have any kids born January through June. I have none. I have a September through December lineup. So it's very Jewish. We go out there and we look at the other team and they're a foot taller than us and they're all way faster than us. So like we play a nice ball. We'll make a chance here or there. We'll get a goal in the first and a goal in the second and we'll concede 6 or 11. And that's just how it is. But anyways, this is not holding the high line with the coach of the Skyline U8s. This is about the Colorado Rapids. So let's move on before we go down this rabbit hole.
So yes, we will be there at 11:30 sharp. I will keep abreast with us on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast, where we'll have a specific more details about our specific location, maybe with a couple of photos that help you find us. So, you know, Mark will be having holding the High Line happy hour. I will be having the Holding the High Line office hours. That'll be from 11:30 to 12:30. Kickoff is, of course, at 1 p.m. And I assume, Mark, if people want, we're available for selfies, photos, autographs, whatever. Or if you just want to come talk to us about the Rapids or tell that we're, you know, an utter crap suboptimal podcast, that's totally okay, too. We are firm believers in free speech, and the officers will be in.
Yep.
Okay, Mark, moving on. I was at training today, and I got a whole bunch of news and injury notes that you can read in full detail at lastwordonsoccer.com. I will give you the brief synopsis for it. First of all, Mark, No sign of, let's get to the guys who for sure are not going to be participating in this Saturday's game whatsoever. Court Ford, of course, not expected to be a part of it. This Saturday will mark his sixth week out of the 8 to 10 weeks that were reported. But word on the street is that he is currently on schedule. So I would expect him back by the end of the month, certainly sometime in May, probably. Also, Marlon Hairston with his little, I don't fully understand the surgery, but it was something to remove cartilage issue in his leg. That was reportedly going to take 2 to 3 weeks. Anthony Hudson said that he still is a bit away on the rehab, so I would err on the side of 3 weeks rather than two.
I think that's great news. I think, you know, when you see a trainer out on the field doing the standard knee test for ACL, MCL, PCL, everybody freaks out. So the fact that it's a 2 week, you know, cartilage thing.
3 week.
Three-week cartilage yes. thing is a big relief.
Yes, so for those of you looking to play Marlon on your fantasy team, he is most probably out for this Saturday as well. Danny Wilson has been listed as day-to-day, and they're going to see about his progress. If this is a Broncos podcast, right now I probably list him as questionable. Based on the history we have both on the Rapids training staff and from Hudson so far this season, they have erred on the side of caution. I would probably bet money more on him not participating than participating. But as far as I know, in all the doors I've tried to kick down, no official details on what's wrong with Danny, nor any sort of a timeline beyond him being day-to-day. Okay, Mark, you want to take any wagers on who's possibly ready to get into their first Rapids game this weekend?
Is he from Albania?
One of them is from Albania.
I don't know who the other one is.
Okay, so, according to Anthony Hudson, Yannick Bolli and Skelshen Gashi are both available for selection. Spoke with Skelshen a little bit, after training today. He said the last 2 weeks have been a little bit rough, where he kind of has to, he trains a little bit, but he has to err on the side of caution, and then there's a conversation with the coaching staff and the medical staff in terms of how he feels. The last 3 days that he has come in for training, those conversation hasn't happened. Right now it's about push yourself as hard in training, see how well you feel, and then if you feel good, that's good for us in terms of you making yourself available. He says that he feels much stronger, the body's ready, he believes that he has no limits right now, and that he can go crazy in practice, and that he's going to feel much better. The training staff is planning on meeting with him a little bit later in the week, probably Thursday or Friday, to assess his availability. Right now he is on schedule to be available for selection and fully fit for Saturday. And then Yannick Bolli was fully engaged in training. This was the best and the fastest I've seen him go. He and Dominic Baggi were changing off in terms of who was running at the back line for some of the drills that they were doing. I would expect Yannick Bolli to be 100% for a guy who hasn't played in a game and completely available in training. Hudson described Gashi as close and available for selection for Saturday. Eichner's still trying to get his fitness, so to speak. I wasn't able to really get an answer into this. Was this being precautionary, or maybe he tweaked something last week that made him be able to play 10, 11 minutes in Philly, but not play in the Dallas game, so to speak. But the anticipation is that he'll be ready to go. If I'm making predictions whatsoever, just based on the lineup and a few other things, Mark, I'm saying that Eichner probably starts and goes to the 60th minute, and I think we'll see Bolli off of the bench. I would expect at least two of those three guys to be in the 18 on Saturday. And then just some other news and notes, kind of under the radar. We found out that Jack McBean was suffering from concussion-like symptoms, but was not under concussion protocol, according to the league, after the collision that he had in New England with that outside back, whose name I still haven't looked up. But he was fully engaged in training and should be absolutely available if needed. And then Enzo Martinez was held out of the game at Dallas. He was on the bench and was an unused sub. Hudson said, quote, "To be honest, we could have pushed Martinez to play Saturday, but it was a big risk. It was a risk we didn't want to take. They could have potentially played him and lost him for 4 or 5 games. Having a weekend off and more rehab, he's in a good place now. He's fully recovered and available for Saturday. There were a couple team drills today, Mark, that he did not participate in, but is in running, but he looked to be totally okay, and I would expect him to be 100% fit, back to where he was, and available for selection. And then Eric Miller quietly has been doing some work on the side with an undisclosed, I don't even call him an injury, or maybe it's a fitness issue, but last week Hudson said that he's close to being back in the next couple of days. I would expect Eric Miller to be available, you know, as the Rapids are a little bit short on center backs. Any other questions on injury news or notes or anything from Field 20?
That's exciting. And it's great to hear all of the players who are about to be ready. I'm bummed about Eric Miller because, you know, I really felt like Kip Colby wasn't quite what we needed the other day. But at the time, I was really concerned that Miller had just been dropped, that he just didn't rate in Anthony Hudson's system. So it's good to hear that there was something physical going on, although it's bad to hear that something physical is going on. I want Eric Miller to get well. I think he could be a real asset to this team going forward as a potential center back or wing back for the squad.
Based on all the information I have, Mark, other than and based on the projections and the estimations that we have for the progress that everybody's made, other than Courtney Ford, everyone should be ready to go by the game after Saturday.
Great.
Which is really encouraging given where this team was a couple of weeks ago in terms of players' availability and fitness. Okay, Mark, that's it for Front Field 20. We have a bunch of hashtag AskHTHLs.
Woo! We love the HTHL Ask HTHL thing. Our first one, from Carter Hedrick. Are you surprised Dylan Cerna wasn't in the starting lineup on Saturday? You know, sorta, but Cerna's a left-footed player. Putting him on the right as fullback was probably, would have been a weird choice. Also, we haven't seen Cerna play a lot of fullback since he was U23, and he played for the USMNT U23s. Pablo never really used him as a left back in his
system. One random open cup game,
and that was right. I think that's right. So no, I'm not really surprised. I think Dylan Cerna is very left footed. I think the reason that you didn't see him sub in and play on the right was that in that game Kip Colby wasn't on the bench. So that's my take on that. Hedrick has a second question, which I'll throw to you, Matt. Zing Leg Tubes, David Z32, who is a longtime reader of Burgundy Wave, he asked basically the same question, which is, what's the deal with late goals? Is it tactical? Is it gelling and communication? Is it personnel? We talked a little bit about it before, but are there any more things you want to add to it, Matt?
Not really. I think if we or the team had an answer to what was going wrong, they would have fixed it by now. So I think it's maybe a couple of different issues. You know, we've talked about the collective defensive breakdowns. You know, certainly bunkering for the last 20 minutes isn't always a successful approach. And, you know, maybe the other team just pressing gets something. I don't think it's one thing. I don't think we have enough data points on this to prove that it's anything systematic at this point, but I think the biggest thing right now is I think the Rapids need to go through a game where the outcome is still in doubt in the 85th minute and then have them be able to hold on simply for the mental psyche of thinking of, you know, oh gosh, here we go again. Whether or not it's real or not, this is something that's going to be, you know, in the id or the super ego at some point, and they need to get it out of them. So I don't know what's up for it, but the Rapids need to have a game where it doesn't happen to flush that out of their system.
Yeah, I think you're right about data. I think, you know, trying to figure that out is really important. If you look at a good statistical measure of whether the Rapids are letting in too many shots and letting in too many shots from good places, expected goals against is a really good metric to look up. You can also find that on AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com. The Rapids right now, after, well, technically three games, the last game doesn't count because they haven't tabulated it yet, are at 4.1 expected goals against. That's roughly league average. Dallas was actually defensively very, very good up till now with an expected goals against of 2.2. And some of the really horrific nightmare teams, Salt Lake, had an expected goals against of 8.6. So, we're right in the middle. We need to tamp it down a little bit, and I think we'll be golden. But it really does, you're right, it really does matter to see what the next eight games will do, and then I think we'll have a good sense of what this defense is and whether it's a systemic problem or a running tactical problem.
Or a personnel issue.
Or just a fluke, or just an early fluke where, you know, like, Kip Colby missed a play here, and Edgar Castillo missed a play there, and Tommy Smith missed a play there, and they all end up in goals, you know. Or really, Declan Wynn, Declan Wynn, and Declan Wynn. Okay, so another question. This is from Jeff Casimir. I've been a believer in him, but it's fading. Make your best argument as to why Nana should start another Rapids 96 game. Jeff, I think you made a good point. I kind of looked into it a little bit. The basic answer, from what I understand defensively, I'm still not quite sold on him. I don't think he has the kind of rush around urgency that some of our other kind of classic D-mids are. The numbers indicate that he's a good passer, that he's a better passer certainly than Michael Azira, and he's a better passer probably than
Jack Price, Sam.
No, Bowman. He's not better than Jack Price. I'm trying to think of who else has been. Oh,
Johan.
He's been better than Enzo. He hasn't been better than Johan, but he's been better than Enzo. And you can look this up on his expected passing numbers, or you can go to whoscored.com and check out some of the basic passing metrics of, like, just basic passing percentage. But he's a little bit better, cleaner passer, and he can strike a long pass very, very well. That's my take on him. You're right, though, there have been questions. And I think defensively he was maybe a net loss in this last game. Here's a question we're going to throw at you, Matt. Do the Rapids give up that late goal in Dallas if Court Ford is able to play?
Journalistically, I absolutely hate dealing in these sort of retroactive hypotheticals, but in the spirit of Ask HDHL and us being at the behest of our Twitter followers, I will choose to engage with. I'm going to err on the side of probably not on this one. You look at the ball and where it was struck and how it was struck and ultimately where it landed and where the Rapids were in terms of their line. While Declan Wynn had a good opportunity to just sort of turn around and make a quick beeline, Ford was going to have to sort of like in American football where you have that D-back who has to, or the safety who has to kind of cover over and look over their shoulder at the ball and also line up where the wide receiver is. I feel like that's something that was just inherently would just be a very, very difficult play to make. I think Ford's probably the most agile and the player on the team most likely to make it given his speed and propensity for being in the air and his skill at headers in the air, given his height as well. I think he's the most likely of the Rapids center backs in order to make that play. I still think that it's extremely low percentage, and I think there's other people and other reasons that that goal would have gone in. So
agree.
I'm going to say no.
I'll just briefly add that, Mauro Diaz had been lofting up and kicking through all kinds of really, like, you know, drop a dime kind of passes, and none of them was clicking. And you could, if you go back and if you watched FC Dallas at all this year, it's the same story. Mauro Diaz was making those really amazing Mauro Diaz passes, and they were a yard off here and a yard off there. Finally, you know, it dropped right in. I mean, let's give Mauro Diaz some credit. He couldn't have put that ball any more perfect onto Christian Coleman's head. So, the next one I think we both have to take, Matt, just because otherwise we will, you know, be in a hallway with this man at some point and he will say something to us and we will both crap our underoos. This is from Cody Costra. What are your guys' thoughts on Tim Howard at this point? It seems like he can't put in the same effort from years past. Surely McMath is the future considering he's 13 years younger, but should he be the present too? So, what do you think about Tim Howard right now, Matt?
Tim Howard's the highest paid player on the team. He's a designated player. He's the captain as appointed by Anthony Hudson. He is the poster boy, and at least until U.S. national team stuff figures itself out, is still one of the primary goalkeepers in the squad, or at least of recent memory. For all of those reasons, there are a number of logistical and marketing reasons why he has to be a major player in the team. I would say Tim's performance this season has been a little bit inconsistent. I would say some of his efforts on goals could be a little bit better, but then on any given night, he is capable of being the man of the match and the MVP for this team and the best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer. You look at all the saves that he made against Sporting.
Mm-hmm.
If you put any pedestrian backup or average starter in there, the Rapids probably lose that game 3-2. Tim Howard is still capable of being an absolute monster. So he is the present in that sense, and for a number of other reasons outside of performance, and actual quality and age, I think he's still going to be the main guy for Anthony Hudson and for the Rapids for this season and 2019 when his contract ultimately comes up, unless he chooses to retire before that.
I'll agree with everything you said. I'll add one little, like, to be more explicit, that there have been a lot of rumors that the Transamerica jersey deal was tied up in the Rapids getting a big-name DP that Transamerica could really sell. Tim Howard is that guy. I mean,
and Tim Howard is in all of the Rapids Transamerica commercials.
I do not think that is a coincidence. You know, he was making omelets over the summer or over the winter. They were doing some sort of like making breakfast with Tim Howard. I thought that was like my favorite video of the whole thing. It was Axel Schoberg and Tim Howard make breakfast with random people at Transamerica. It was my favorite. Anyways, I agree with all that. I think that it's a settled question for this year. Tim's the number one goalkeeper for the Rapids. There is no controversy. I do think he's declining. I still think he's an average or slightly above average MLS goalkeeper who still has the capability of standing on his head and delivering a win when he needs to. My big problem is 2019. This contract is 1 year too long for me. I think next year the likelihood that he's still really first team, first goalkeeper selection quality is really questionable.
And I will say this for another time, but I have serious reservations about burning a designated player spot on a goalkeeper. But
yeah, that's another conversation for another time. But I fully agree. Great question from Jeff Casimir. On Saturday, would you rather play a TFC team that wins tonight, as they did, or a team that is exhausted and excited, or one that lost and is sad or out for revenge? So what would you have preferred, to have seen a pissed off TFC that lost, or a tired TFC that feels like a massive juggernaut because they can wander around Mexico slaying dragons whenever they want?
Give me an exhausted, victorious Toronto FC that is not thinking about the Rapids whatsoever and is entirely focused on their two May dates with Chivas de Guadalajara. Winning that game or getting a draw tonight to ultimately put them through on aggregate makes Saturday the perfect trap opportunity for the Rapids to get 3 points that a whole bunch of other Western Conference teams will not be able to do against Toronto this season.
Yeah, I don't think you can, I'll say it differently, which is like, I don't think it matters in the sense that like, you mentally and emotionally get up to play in Azteca, one of the most legendary, probably like one of the top five most legendary places to play football in this hemisphere. You know,
it's certainly number one on the continent for me.
Yeah. You go down to South America, you get
the Americana in Brazil
and La Bombonera, which is, I think is Argentina. But
yes,
and after that, it's pretty much Azteca.
Yeah, and the only other stadium on those two continents to host a World Cup final, I believe, is the Rose Bowl from '94.
And the Americana.
Which will not be participating in the game potentially in the 2026 World Cup.
And I always think of that as a college football place because I grew up in LA. But anyways, yes. The point being, I don't think you can emotionally get up for a game like that and then come to Commerce City and have the same excitement. And it's no disrespect to Dick's Sporting Goods Park. It's just how the human
body... It's not a historic stadium with 80,000 people.
You've only got so many endorphins and so much serotonin in your body. Like, you flood it on a Tuesday night. Your brain is not going to react on Saturday and get super amped up. Like, Giovinco's not going to come in super pumped up like he did down there. Anyways. So I don't think it matters. Win, lose, they just won't have the energy, and they're probably going to lose this week. Last questions from Spencer Cutright. What a great name, Cutright. I got a lame last name. Cutright's a great one. He plays 11 minutes against Philly. He doesn't show up in the injury report or 18 versus Dallas. Now he's not practicing. That was a report today out of Burgundy Wave. What's up with Stefan Aigner? So I think, Matt, you answered it a little bit.
Eigner was in training today. He did not participate fully in the training, and most of the activities he didn't do were with the team. I would imagine the decision, there's some information that we don't have, or it was a coach's decision as far as getting him fully fit as it relates to the FC Dallas game. As I reiterated during Front Field 20, Eigner is progressing physically from week to week. He's better this week than he was last week, than he was the week before, and he is available for selection come Saturday. So unless something happens to where they want to be, the training staff wants to be cautious, I would imagine if Eigner is not starting or not in the 18 or doesn't play, that that is a coach's decision, not a medical training staff decision.
And I'll add, you know, players play different roles and they give different looks to the offense. And it is slightly concerning for me as someone who likes Stefan Eigner and thinks he did a great job in a couple of the games last year that he got into, that Johan Blomberg is kind of taking his slot, you know what I mean? He's got this midfield dime dropper, you know, because Gashi's your long bomb shooter with the left foot, right? Enzo is your both ways harasser who can also hold up play a little bit and hold the ball very nicely. Jack Price is your deep lying regista who can kill and destroy as a, so, like, what do you need Eigner for? I mean, I think that's a potential problem. So even if he's healthy, you know, has he been Wally Pipped out of a spot in the lineup? That's a concern that I have.
We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'd like to, I think we're in a pretty good place where we can have TAM-level players who need to fight for minutes. I don't love that. I'd rather to have TAM-level players who are just gangbusters and you slot them in immediately. But that's a pretty good problem to have as opposed to having to play your expensive players because they're your expensive players. Because the alternative to your expensive player is a guy you drafted this year and is making $65,000 a year.
I have a surprise Ask AHTHL that I've been thinking about, Mark. So,
did you write this up yourself?
No.
Did your girlfriend in Canada send this to you by
mail? I don't have a girlfriend in Canada.
Dude, everyone's got a girlfriend in Canada.
Okay.
No, not me.
So I mentioned the Grimsby Town's Wikipedia page. They're currently in League 2. I'm going to ask you, which do you think there are more of people in the world? Let's get every single Rapid supporter on the planet Earth and ask them straight up, prior to listening to this podcast, have you heard of Grimsby Town?
Well, I have because I read The Ball Is Round by, and I also listened to the Howler podcast, and what's his name? The author of the book, David Goldblatt, he mentions Grimsby Town all the time.
Okay, and the actor comedian who does the every Premier League team in 90 seconds on YouTube. He is a Grimsby Town supporter, as I just found out as well. So, okay, so what's more? Rapids fans who have heard of Grimsby Town, or let's get all the Grimsby Town supporters, or in the entire county in the Midlands there, and ask them how many of them have heard of the Colorado Rapids. Which ones is more? Now, keep in mind, Grimsby Town was non-league from 2010 to 2016. So they were in FIFA 2009. They have been in the most two recent iterations of FIFA, but none of the ones in between. Which do you think is more, Mark?
By the way, that is an amazing, astute comment of the importance of
being in the football league.
Being in FIFA.
Yeah.
If you don't make the top four divisions, you're not like Forest Green Rovers is this team that I also know of. And they're non-league, and they haven't made it. I have a scarf over here in my scarf wall from Woking. They're fifth tier also. Nobody's ever heard of them. I'm going to say, because I assume that people in England eat, sleep, and breathe football, that more Grimsby Town supporters have heard of the Colorado Rapids than Colorado Rapids fans have heard of Grimsby Town.
How much of that are you attributing to Tim Howard leaving Edmonton for the Rapids?
None? At all. I assume that people in England are vaguely aware of MLS now that they've also doing a pretty decent job of apparently streaming a couple games in England for cheap or free or something like that. My point, and this is just related kind of sideways, but the EMLS Cup was this weekend, and the Colorado Rapids representative, Buck Army. I think it was Buck Army.
His username. His last name has Buck in it.
Yeah. And he got knocked out early. But I think this whole thing of getting on the FIFA train is really, really important because, you know, having
it's an untapped market.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but a significant factor for me in falling in love with actual soccer was video game soccer, because you can look over there. We're in my basement with my PlayStation 3, and you can see FIFA 9 is right over there. And on PS2, I had FIFA 05. You know, like, I have all kinds of memories of great players and great teams that I would have never heard of. And then I started to follow soccer in a serious way because it was a fun video game. And by comparison, you know, the MLB baseball game on PlayStation, the NBA one, the even Madden, they're not as fun. I mean, FIFA's just a really good playable video game, and it made watching soccer in real life even better. It was like, oh, soccer's the best sport to enjoy and watch. It's way better than all these other boring sports, and the video game proves it. Anyways, slight digression.
Completely agree with you, Mark. Okay, that does it for us on everything that we have on this podcast, folks. Quick reminder, join us for HTHL office hours / happy hour at the C38 tailgate from 11:30 to 12:30 on Saturday leading up to the game against Toronto FC. Follow me and Mark individually on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard and at Rapids Rabbi respectively. Check out our collective and individual written audio and video content at LastWordOnSoccer.com, AroundMLS.com, and AmericanSoccerNow.com. Follow us on the socials at Rapids96Podcast, and you can email the show at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Any other closing thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, we've got one more big thing. So Matt did an interview this week with?
With Johan Blomberg.
Yeah, and so we're going to try something different instead of throwing it onto this pod. If you're interested in hearing what Matt and Johan talked about, you can
basically Swedish Smooth playing in the Swedish lower divisions and him being a beast at dropping dimes,
which sounds just like awesome. He sounds like a fascinating character. That's going to be a standalone pod that we're going to throw out there sometime later this week. You should totally listen to that. We'll throw this in either the show notes or we'll tweet it out also so that you know that it's coming. But
it will be available.
We're trying that, and if you like to just hear an interview and then be done with it, let us know on Twitter or send us an email. If you like the format that we've tried before of throwing an interview into the middle of this conversation, please tell us.
Or if you want to hear more banter, or if you want more press interviews, or you want us to bring in other players and, you know, do more stuff from training as opposed to analysis, we're open to what you want to hear. I guess just closing note on that, the interview will be released in time for Saturday, so you can. It will be posted at the very latest early Saturday morning, so if you want to listen to it on the way to DSG Park, that will certainly be available. I think that does it for us, Mark. We'll see you all on Saturday.
Good game.